From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/wv. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, legislation to ensure the state can pay its bills by the end of the fiscal year is on Governor Tomlin's desk, and he says he'll sign them quickly. But bills to repeal the state's prevailing wage and implement right to work, Tomlin says those could see a veto. We speak with the governor tonight. Also on our show, major changes have come to some controversial bills in the House of Delegates, and the education chairs join us to discuss their work this 60-day session. Those stories coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. As the vote to repeal the state's prevailing wage draws closer in the West Virginia Senate, Democratic members of the chamber are not being silent about their opposition. Today, two senators tried to amend the legislation on the floor.
House Bill 4005, repealing the state's prevailing wage, was on second reading in the Senate Wednesday. Prevailing wage is the hourly rate and benefits paid to workers on state-funded construction projects. Members of the GOP maintain it artificially inflates wage rates and, if repealed, would save taxpayers money. Democrats say repeal would lower wages for workers across the state. Senator Herb Snyder of Jefferson County made the first attempt to amend the bill. His amendment would repeal the state's prevailing wage rate, but instead put the federally calculated prevailing wage in place. That federal rate is referred to as the Davis-Bacon wage, after the two congressmen who first introduced the bill in the 1930s.
Gets the state of West Virginia completely out of the calculation business, doesn't try to recalculate anything. It's all done at the federal level, and they've been doing it for many, many, many decades. And it's been refined many, many, many times.
Republican members of the chamber stood to speak against the amendment, including Senate Majority Leader Mitch Carmichael.
And one of the things I might take exception with to my good friend from Jefferson was the fact that if we do not adopt his amendment instilling the Davis-Bacon wage rates, that we will be left with nothing. Well, what I would say is what we will be left with is capitalism, is free markets.
The amendment failed on a party-line vote. Democratic Senator Mike Romano also attempted to amend the repeal bill. Romano wanted language added to the bill that would require West Virginia workers be given preference on government work sites. If that's not possible, the amendment requires that preference be given to laborers, workers, or mechanics that are U.S. citizens.
We can help West Virginia workers. We can help them. If we don't want to help them by making sure that it's a level playing field when competing with out-of-state contractors, then we can certainly make sure that they get the first bite of the apple of our public money and public projects.
His amendment also failed on a party-line vote, with all 18 Republicans voting against it. The full repeal bill will be up for a final vote in the chamber Thursday.
Over in the House, delegates made changes to two bills that have drawn crowds to the Capitol in protest this session. A bill to make West Virginia a right-to-work state will be up for a vote in the chamber tomorrow, while the Religious Freedom Restoration Act is still making its way through the committee process. Liz McCormick details the changes lawmakers made to the legislation today.
Senate Bill 1 was on second reading in the House today. It's the West Virginia Workplace Freedom Act, or more commonly known as Right to Work. This bill would make it illegal for a company to fire someone who refuses to join a union or refuses to pay union fees or dues. Supporters say it protects the rights of workers who disagree with unions politically, but those who oppose it say if non-union employees in union workplaces no longer pay those fees, they'll struggle to provide services, like contract negotiations. House Judiciary Chairman Delegate John Schott of Mercer County proposed an amendment that changes some of the language in the Senate's version of the bill.
Strike and insert basically replaces the Senate bill with a much simpler version of the Right to Work bill. It eliminates some administrative features. It eliminates some confusing language regarding a daily penalty, a continuation of a daily penalty. It clarifies the rights that an employee who is wrongfully terminated as a result of the employer's action in forcing the person to join a union or not allowing the person to leave the union without being terminated. So it's basically an overall clarification and simplification of the original version.
The amendment passed, but not without obvious division along party lines. The Right to Work bill will be up for a final vote tomorrow in the House. In the House Judiciary Committee this morning, members took up House Bill 4012, the West Virginia Religious Freedom Restoration Act. In its introduced version, this bill would ensure that all cases where state action substantially burdens the practice of a person's religion, judges would be directed to apply strict scrutiny in court procedures. The bill also provides a claim or defense to the person who felt they were wronged. Members of the House Judiciary Committee took up a committee substitute of the bill that proposed some changes. Again, House Judiciary Chairman John Schott.
Well, the committee substitute basically intends to track the language of the federal bill that's been in effect since, I think, 1993. And it's also intended to clarify that the West Virginia Constitution, Article 3, is basically the basis for our religious freedoms and codify, in other words, put into the law the test that courts would apply in determining whether or not a person's interest has been substantially burdened by an action of the state government, some agency of the state government. And it's sort of a balancing test. The court has to weigh various factors in order to determine whether the action of the state agency or the state government is appropriate or whether it violates the person's rights under our state constitution.
Those in opposition to this bill feel it would create a license to discriminate. However, supporters say by having a standard in place for courts to follow, it would determine whether a claim stemmed from a sincere religious belief.
What we're trying to do is create a system, a process in which these claims can be litigated with predictable standards. So while the outcome may vary from situation to situation, the standards will be the same.
The House Judiciary Committee continued to look at this bill into the afternoon. For the Legislature Today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
The Religious Freedom Restoration Act was approved by the House Judiciary Committee this afternoon. It now goes to the full House for consideration. As we just saw, lawmakers will vote on the Right to Work and prevailing wage repeal provisions tomorrow. But Governor Tomlin is already saying he'll consider vetoing both measures. The governor sat down with me this afternoon to discuss those bills and the state of West Virginia's finances. Governor, thank you so much for your time this afternoon.
Well, glad to be here.
So I want to start first with some supplemental appropriations bills that you presented to the legislature. Those have been approved by both the House and Senate and are coming back to you for your signature. Explain to us again why these bills are so important.
Well, the thing we got to realize that we're kind of working on two budgets right now because of the revenue shortfalls in the current year's budget, fiscal year 2016. That's the reason I need the supplementals now, to make sure that after this week that we're able to pay our bills, pay for the programs and services that the state buys. And that's very important because we don't want to get behind on our bills. Then the second part of it is with the other proposals I've made is basically will affect 2017 budget and beyond. So it's very important that the legislature get the supplementals passed. It's taken over a little bit over $50 million from the rainy day fund for this current year's bills. There's other pockets of money that we've been able to identify that's not necessarily, you know, has to be used right now that we were able to, you know, identify, and the legislature has now, I think, agreed to, and both houses, I think, have passed the supplementals, which will help get us on through this year. Obviously, the other proposals are the 45 cents tax on cigarettes, you know, which will basically you know, raise somewhere around $71 million next year, but nearly half of that money, or maybe more than half of that money, I'm proposing that will go into the to fund PEIA. Obviously, we know that there's about $120 million shortfall that the Finance Board had predicted. Basically, this, along with rebidding some prescription drug contracts and other funds, will be able to really lessen the impact that this shortfall is going to have on our public employees and teachers. And then the other part was eliminating the exemption on the communications tax, basically 6% on cell and landline phones, like 41 other states have. That will give us another $60+ million, which will really help us balance our budget for 2017. So, you know, once again, there's the most important thing to me right now is getting the money we need to finish out this current year's fiscal year. And you know, it's getting, you know, a third of the way through the session now, and I was getting a little bit nervous about it, but we do have timelines when the state would actually run out of money if these bills are not passed and I sign them into law.
So I just want to be really clear. No West Virginian at this point should be worried that the state can't pay its bills.
I don't think so. I think Senate came together nearly 2 weeks ago. They suspended the rules, and it was a unanimous vote, 34-0. They passed them over to the House. They've been lingering in the House for some time, but I understand that they're moving again right now. So that's very important. And I don't think the people of the state has to worry that we will not be able to pay our bills. I think, you know, that the legislature will come together and you know, do what's right for West Virginia. And that's, you know, what I've always done. That's what I ask them to do. Let's take care of the people's business, make sure we can pay our bills, you know, and provide the services that the people that both need and want in West Virginia.
Governor, tomorrow, Thursday, both the House and Senate will be voting on some contentious pieces of legislation, right to work in the House and a repeal of the state's prevailing wage in the Senate. Do you expect to sign those bills, or are you considering vetoes?
I'm considering vetoes. Obviously, I'm probably outnumbered. Yeah, you know, the point is that my position has not changed, but on the prevailing wage, there were some changes on how we collect data, you know, for to determine what the prevailing wage was. You know, that's only that new way of collecting data has only been in place a very few months. You know, I would prefer that you know, that the legislature give a time to see if it works, and you know, we want to see our people in West Virginia make good wages, not less wages. And so it would be my hope that it not come down, and I wouldn't have to veto it, and in particular they wouldn't override it. But you know, if that's the way it is, that's the way it is. But you know, I can't see that as a you know, something that's absolutely necessary in West Virginia. The other thing I've said, of all the major businesses we've been able to attract to the state over the last few years, you know, not one CEO or individual has said, you know, we would come here, but for right to work. And yeah, I'm not sure if that's can produce the kind of jobs that they, you know, that they claim it will. But you know, that's, once again, I don't think it's necessary, and I'm considering very seriously and probably will veto it.
Governor, you've been doing this for many, many years, involved in the legislative process for many years. Overall this year, how do you think this session is going?
Well, you know, I think most of the votes that we've seen up to this point have been on more social type issues than they have been on financial issues. And almost on every one of them, or most of them, they've been straight party line votes. And, you know, I've always said that, you know, the difference between us and Washington, D.C. is we see what's happening in D.C. You know, there's no compromise. There's no, you know, looking and trying to negotiate or compromise and come with something that's going to help this country. But I say here in West Virginia, we've been always able to get up, you know, cross those party lines and work together and have that compromise. And, you know, and I think that's really what the people of this state and this country want, is, you know, for the parties to work together to do the job that we're sent here to do, and that's represent and do what's best for the people in the state of West Virginia.
Governor Tomlin, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ashton.
Bill Cole was elected to the West Virginia Senate in 2012. A Republican, he's from Mercer County, representing the 6th Senatorial District. Cole serves as the Senate President and the Chair of the Committee on Rules. Ken Hicks is a Democrat from Wayne County. He was elected to the House in 2014. Delegate Hicks represents the 19th House District. Don Perdue was first elected to the House of Delegates in 1998. A Democrat, he's from Wayne County. He's the executive director of the Wayne County Economic Development Authority. Justin Markham is a Democrat from Mingo County. He represents the state's 20th House of Delegates district. Delegate Markham was first appointed to his seat in 2012 and won election that same year.
Going into this legislative session, members of the GOP majority made it clear changes in the state's education system are a priority. Joining us this evening to discuss the proposals they'll oversee in the next 40-some days are the chairs of the House and Senate Education Committees, Delegate Paul Espinosa and Senator Dave Seipold. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you. Good to be with you this evening.
Thank you, Ashton. Always a pleasure.
We have to start with a little bit of a political question this afternoon before we get into some of the policy discussions. And that is a member of the State Board of Education who resigned today, Wade Linger from Marion County. In his resignation letter, he said, quote, "It is impossible for the State Board to be effective in carrying out its mission under current conditions, particularly in the legislature." Basically a letter saying the legislature is too involved in the in the education process. I'm going to ask you both to respond to that. Senator, can we start with you?
Oh, absolutely. I haven't really read his response or his resignation yet, so I don't know all the facts behind his reasoning. However, I would say that the West Virginia Constitution provides for a place for the legislature and a place for the Board of Education. And if the board feels that we're stepping on their toes, that's what we have the judiciary for, and the Supreme Court can sort all that out.
Delegate, do you have a response to Mr. Linger?
Well, like Senator Seipold, I haven't had an opportunity to review Mr. Linger's comments since being elected to the legislature in 2012. Had an opportunity to work with Mr. Linger and have enjoyed our working relationship. Certainly regret that he's decided to step down. Like Senator Seipold, clearly the Constitution indicates that both the board and the legislature has a role, and I certainly recognize there's going to be times when, the line gets a little blurred as to where one responsibility starts and the other begins. But clearly we do have a role under the Constitution, but I certainly wish Mr. Linger well and certainly want to have a good, strong working relationship with the Board of Education.
Well, let's start talking about some of the policies that the legislature is overseeing. And Senator, I want to start with a bill that was approved in the Senate today. That bill basically reduced the number of reports that the Legislative Oversight Commission on Education Accountability receives. Are you all giving up some of your oversight to the education system?
Actually, not as much as it would seem. Up to this point, I think the number of reports that come before LOCEA has increased over the years. I think we're up to about 65 now, and especially with the reduced number of interim committee meetings we had, it was tough to even fit them all in and have a chance to talk about them all. We discovered by looking through the code that there were a lot of reports which were duplicative, some information that can be found in other places. Sometimes we can reduce the number of reports, things which are not pertinent anymore. So I don't think that it was ceding any oversight. It was more just right-sizing it and maybe reducing some of the administrative overhead.
Delegate, when we had the senator here last year, he talked a lot about public charter schools. That bill started in the Senate, and they worked on it for weeks, and it ended up not passing last session. Now the House is dealing with public charter schools. You all are leading that bill this year. What are you doing differently this year to ensure that bill will pass?
Well, certainly the Senate did a lot of good work on that legislation last year, so it's not as if we're starting from scratch. We essentially took the Senate version of the bill, and as one of only seven states in the country that do not currently authorize public charter schools, we do have the benefit of being able to see what works and, almost as importantly, what doesn't work. And so what we've tried to do is to build off of the legislation that was passed out of the Senate last year. We ran out of time, of course, in the House. We've tried to incorporate many of the lessons learned from around the state, particularly from those high-performing states that have very strong public charter system, and try to incorporate that in our legislation. So we're still working through the legislation, obviously trying to educate our members as to what the various provisions are, because there are some key differences. One of the things, I think one of the lessons learned, is that you have to have very strong authorization of public charter school applications. And so in addition to having local school boards authorized to be an authorizer, we also create a state oversight board similar to that that's been established in, I think, 16 or 17 other states around the country to provide strong authorization and oversight for those counties that perhaps don't feel that they're capable of fulfilling that role. So, again, working through that process and certainly have some work to do on it, but I do think generally folks do agree that providing additional flexibility, additional options for parents is a good thing.
Well, Senator, that oversight, that was an issue that some of the senators on your committee brought up about their concern was there wasn't enough oversight to these charter schools. Do you think this bill is going to satisfy those concerns?
I'm not sure yet. Actually, I was going to wait and see what the House does with it. Where it starts is not nearly as important as where it ends up. I'm sure there will be amendments in the process and a lot of good discussion. As you recall from last year in the Senate, we started with one bill and what we ended up with was entirely different. But I think oversight is absolutely paramount to the education process, and we need to make sure that we keep our education process on track.
Well, Ashton, I think one of those lessons learned that seems to be pretty prevalent among the most successful public charter school models around the country is that increased flexibility is a key aspect of public charter schools. However, if you don't marry that with heightened accountability, you don't necessarily see the improved results or the outcomes that public chartering schools outline in their applications. So that is very key to have both the flexibility but also strong oversight.
We started talking about a State Board of Education member who resigned, and one place that the legislature and the State Board of Ed have clashed, I think is fair to say, over the past year or so, is when it comes to Common Core education standards. The board has repealed those standards and during the next school year has replaced them with another set. Senator, have you gotten to review those standards, or do you expect that to be a conversation that comes up in your committee?
Well, we haven't reviewed them as a committee. We did do some work during the interim on some side-by-sides, or what they call a crosswalk, to take a look at what we had before and what we ended up with. I understand that, as I perceive it anyway, the new standards that were approved by the board are very, very similar to what was classified as the Common Core standards. They moved a few things around, but by and large, they're almost the same.
So, Delegate, you have a bill, to repeal Common Core, which we seem to think have already been done. That's already been taken care of. So, can you briefly explain to me what this bill does?
Sure. Well, I had very much hoped that this issue would be behind us, but like Senator Seipold indicated, a number of our members, when they looked at what supposedly replaced the previous standards, they look remarkably like the previous standards, the Common Core standards. The legislation that I anticipate that we'll be taking up does really three things. One, it codifies the repeal. I think in speaking with our members, I think there's a strong belief that we really need to codify that. Secondly, it does set forth what we believe is a thoughtful approach to helping ensure that we do create and adopt strong standards that West Virginians can be confident in. And then thirdly, it addresses the whole question of assessments. I think one of the things that I know I and many of my colleagues hear repeatedly is just the concerns over testing, the amount of testing associated with the year-end assessments. And so one of the concerns, frankly, is that if the new adopted standards are really so different than the Common Core standards, how are we able to use the same assessment that we've been using with the Common Core standards? So again, while attempting not to micromanage, because I know that's a concern that the board and others have, it does set forth a process by which we can adopt an assessment tool that, again, we believe that parents and other interested parties can have confidence in.
I do want to just briefly mention that you're having a public hearing on that bill tomorrow at 9 a.m., and we will be carrying that live on our West Virginia channel and on our website, wvpublic.org.
Appreciate your coverage of that.
Thank you so much. Delegate Espinoza, Senator Seipold, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Thank you.
Again, tomorrow, the House of Delegates will vote on the proposed right-to-work legislation, and the Senate will vote on a repeal of the state's prevailing wage. You can watch those votes live on the West Virginia Channel at 11 a.m. tomorrow or on our website, wvpublic.org. This has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us.
Support for the Legislature Today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/wv. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org.
From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.